To increase this kind of network capacity, Sustain Northern Rivers created a priority area called social innovation and is facilitated by a stewardship team whose job it is to look after the process of the collaboration. I've talked about resilience and how group intelligence and social learning emerges from networks, and the great learning curve I went through while working with the co-collaborators in this Sustain Northern Rivers space. Here's another important concept from resilience theory. Resilient systems, or living systems, have tipping points. There's a level of disturbance beyond which they can flip into a different kind of system and never return to the same kind of functioning. Think of a lake near a suburb that absorbs nutrient runoff year after year after year. Nothing much appears to happen. But then a critical threshold is passed. The lake ecosystem cannot maintain the same functioning. It becomes turbid. It won't go back to the old Clearwater system. This happened in the cod fishery off Newfoundland. Overfished for years, it reached a tipping point. One of the planet's richest fisheries. It went past a critical threshold and has been lost. It shows no signs of going back to its old richness and diversity. Complex human systems can suffer this same fate. Once this occurs, an organisation or community has lost its ability to retain the same basic functions. It has ceased being resilient. Being human and not fish has some advantages. As humans, we have the ability to attend to trends and say, this system is heading for a crash. We better adapt fast. We better build our capacity to handle what's coming our way. We have a fantastic ability to note trends. But do we really want to pay attention? Here's another example of a tipping point. Oops, we'll skip that one. This is a graph that shows the relationship between food prices and political instability in North Africa and the Middle East. So what we have is the food price index here, and we can see that once it goes above around about the 220 mark, we get outbreaks of political instability and food riots. And there's an outbreak of them across the world in 2008 when we had very high food prices, and we got another outbreak. We reached that critical threshold just before the Arab Spring broke out. So it appears that food price index of above 220 is such a tipping point, a contributing factor to help ignite latent pressures for regime change. Another set of tipping points is pushing the climate system beyond the threshold, with extreme weather events becoming more frequent, protracted and damaging. North American food bowls have been hit hard with extreme drought and heat. Recently, the UK government chief scientist warned of a perfect storm that's likely to lead to political instability as demand for food, water and energy output outstrip supply. But how many of us want to think about big threats that might be looming? To shy away from such news is so human, it's so natural for us to do this. Business as usual is comfortable. But here's the key thing about resilience in our organisations and communities. It depends on our ability to perceive and respond to threats. We need our boundaries tested to think of solutions. This is what's good about fire drills. The siren goes off. Everyone tries to remember what they're meant to be doing, and then we all get together and review what we did well and what we need to do differently. Communities that have regular bushfires have their boundaries tested. They're likely to have better responses when a big one comes through. Where I live, in the Channon west of here, I dread to think what would happen if we got extreme fire weather. We're good at floods, not fires. Even though we have a terrific fire brigade, I don't think people on the ridges would have thought about how dangerous our roads would be if they made a late decision to evacuate. When I began, I told you how, well supported by my networks, I was able to integrate my Ash Wednesday experience, but I have to tell you that my networks were mainly in Adelaide. What if I lost members of my family and people from all my closest networks in the community? What if the destruction was so total that most of my district's infrastructure was obliterated? I can only imagine how long the recovery process must be before the community can function something like it did before. My eyes have recently been opened to another destructive force sweeping rural communities. And if you eat food, and I think you all do, I strongly suggest you read this book, Richland, Wasteland by Sharon Munro, because this is about what's happening in the thin strip of arable productive land in this continent. I think I'll just skip that. So I've got five? Okay, so this tells the story of what's happening as communities are consumed by coal mining, as they're rolled over by a relentless pressure from coal mining companies that basically take possession of their communities in a major way. This tendency to say it won't happen here is so strong. It's our Achilles heel. We don't want to imagine crisis, and I'm like that too. When I first heard that gas mining was planned in our region, I thought it would involve a few conventional gas wells in Casino. And I really didn't want to take on that this thing could be happening. Well, as Richard said, we've found a response to this. This is a picture of Sonora, Texas. And this is a picture of the gas wells, a baby gas field in Queensland. We've had a very strong response to this. We've been helped by our friends in Queensland who are telling us to get going. So what we've done, I'm just going to show the film now because we've got a 5-minute film. I think we'll just go straight to the film. Yeah. We'll just go straight to the film. So basically, while they're bringing the film up, this is what we did in our community. And I think it's really important to recognise that as communities deal with these things, it's a story for adult learning as well, because people need to increase their skills to deal with this kind of threat. This is the biggest threat to our community since World War II.
We find ourselves in a time that we've never seen before. It is the greatest threat to the actual coherence of our land here.
People can get very despairing. I mean, when you see the size of the corporations involved, and when people realise what we have at stake, you know, the loss of our magnificent farmlands, the industrialisation of extremely beautiful landscapes, this really tears at people's hearts.
Whatever doesn't wreck a community makes it stronger.
Social movements are probably the most powerful force that citizens have. They're a very, very powerful means of changing society, changing legislation, and that's what's happening with coal seam gas. The power actually lies in the community. It's not about an individual gas rig or an individual company. It's actually about convincing the community that this change has to be. And when people have that sort of power, very hard to stop them.
We're here to celebrate community. Through public meetings and by door-to-door survey, we have, by overwhelming majority, decided to declare our roads and lands CSG free.
This is the most spine-tingling event I've been to in my time as mayor.
We're seeing farmers of all varieties joining up with greenies, light greenies, dark greenies, and this is really exciting.
So now, friends and neighbours, it's time for us to walk to our roads. We're about to present these declarations to our mayor. What we've done is we've launched
possibly Australia's first self-declared coal seam gas-free community. 99% of people in Keurong and the Shannon want their community to be coal seam gas-free. We are emphatically saying to the gas industry and to the government, we do not want this destructive industry here. And while there is no formal legal power to what this community has done, there's moral and social power in it. It's a political statement, and this community will do what it takes to defend this beautiful region of ours from this destructive industry.
Are we ready to Terania Creek Road? We encourage other communities to do what we've done here. The secret is genuine neighbour-to-neighbour engagement. A gas-filled free road sign is of little use unless there's a strong community behind it.
I think we can achieve this, and the response here today shows that we've got something happening here.
You are so connected, you are so united, you are so supportive of each other, that you are learning about each other's lives and connecting this strong web of community that will not go away even when coal seam gas does.
We are from all walks of life and political persuasions, united in a fast-growing mass movement. We will not shirk our responsibility to protect the country we love. We insist on justice and fairness. We insist on the precautionary principle to protect our water, our rights, and our communities. Our opposition is non-violent, but non-negotiable.
We insist that the Northern Rivers is declared a CSG-free region. Congratulations, you are now part of the greatest social movement Australia has ever seen.
Lock the gate, lock the road, lock the community.
Find out how to go CSG free at
CSGfreeNorthernRivers.org.
We are all leaders in this movement. It's up to us.
Thanks. We lost a bit of time at the beginning, so I'm just going to, I just to conclude, I just want to say that there's a big learning journey for people in this, and this is going to be the case over all of the arable parts of rural Australia that have coal underneath them, which is a hell of a lot of our food growing country. And the learning and skills development that's needed relates to a number of things. One of them is the Lock the Gate movement provides free education, training in media skills and non-violent direct action and social movement theory, amongst other things, and community engagement. But the people involved, these farmers, if they protect them, their communities and their food growing, they need to learn how to use email, how to do document management in a computer. They need to know how to facilitate an action group so that it doesn't decay into a discussion group. And, there's just so many things that they need to come to grips with. And if anybody here has got a clue or some brilliant ideas on how, what sort of mobile outreach model could work in rural Australia facing these sorts of issues, I'd be thrilled to discuss these things with you in the break. So.